Welcome to Side by Side, a podcast where I, Robert Kwong, take you inside conversations with artists, creatives, healers, and warriors taking the charge in their transformational story. Today's guest is writer and producer Steve DiUbaldo. Steve serves as a co-producer and writer on the Apple TV Plus series Swagger, where his passion for basketball meets his talent as a writer. In this conversation, we journey back to his theater roots, his time playing and coaching basketball, and changes that are needed to support the labor and sacrifice behind the entertainment industry. So Steve, the last time we caught up, it had been a minute since we'd seen each other. And it was like, I was like, do I want to broadcast this? But we had our 10-year anniversary, or 10-year reunion for our cohort of like grad students from Tisch School of the Arts. So it made me think about like the good old days, basically. And so thanks for saying yes, being willing to speak with me.
Yeah, for sure. No, that was fun to catch up with everybody. And it's kind of crazy that it's been 10 years.
It has. A lot has changed for everyone. Mm-hmm. But it was actually sort of nice. And it made me think about, you know, the world of writing and all the things that we went through. You know, when we were in the writing program at NYU, yeah, you know, it's one of those places where I guess you wouldn't necessarily have talked about some of the stuff that you really cared about and you were passionate about before, like basketball, mm-hmm. which is so funny now because you can sort of get to like integrate the two. So it kind of makes me curious about that side of you, because I know how important it is. When did you start playing basketball?
Yeah, I mean, growing up, that was really my passion. I was an athlete. I played football and baseball as well as a kid. But, you know, as I got older into my teenage years, I kind of stopped playing the other sports and really focused on basketball. And I just really loved the sport, and for a lot of reasons. It gave me a community, and I moved a lot as a kid. And it also exposed me to so many different people that I never would have met if it wasn't for the sport. And so, yeah, I was really competitive, a competitive player, and ended up playing AAU basketball, played Division I college basketball, got to go to the NCAA tournament, March Madness.
Oh, whoa.
And ironically enough, I had a coach my freshman year who put a bunch of us into an acting class. And, you know, oftentimes team GPA is a topic. And that sort of was a part of one of the reasons is you kind of always get an A in acting class if you show up. But for me, like, I just really fell in love with it right away and always loved movies and TV, but had never really been to too many plays or anything like that. But there was just something about sort of seeing the words on the page in a script that really resonated with me. And then getting to perform a play, which was Twilight Los Angeles 1992 by Anna Deavere Smith about the Rodney King riots. And just seeing how people on campus, like young people, like, you know, I was a young person at the time, but really responded to the messages of the play. And it's a very powerful piece. And just kind of fell in love with it. Didn't really know it was happening while it was happening. I just was like, I kind of want to do more of this. And I was always like a pretty observant person. And often when you're a new kid, you're kind of reading your environment and trying to figure it out. And so kind of cool, you know, basketball was where I always felt most comfortable. And still to this day, like that's always where I feel really comfortable, and like all the other stuff kind of disappears. Yeah, then many years of being a writer, and then I didn't think to write something about basketball. And when I finally did, you know, it kind of set me on this path.
It's funny you mentioned Twilight Los Angeles, because I think I saw a recording of Anna Deavere Smith like performing all the different characters and everything. And it was so, I remember thinking, wow, this is so powerful. And also, honestly, I didn't even know about the Los Angeles riots until I saw that piece of work, really. So it was like a piece of history that I just didn't have any context around. So I remember, and I was like, I love Anna Deavere Smith. How are you able to do this and just capture every role anyway? So
yeah, I watched that recording you're talking about too, and it's pretty amazing. I mean, she is a great writer and performer, but also the part of that that's so cool is like what a journalist she was to kind of compile all of those interviews that she got for it. And like, I think over 200, that might be wrong, but
that's right.
It's been a while since I did it, obviously, but I remember when we were talking about it, I think she had hundreds of interviews that she kind of sifted through to make it a narrative, which is really cool.
So funny you bring that up, because I remember looking at an older conversation we had before. You were talking about how it made sense to have like journalism and standing up on issues and storytelling to coexist and to put them all together. And it kind of just makes sense. I remember you talking about that, and I very much feel the same way. But back to basketball, what to you is like the most magical part about playing basketball? If you can like describe, everything else kind of washes away.
I guess in terms of the game itself, it's just a beautiful game. It's very fluid. You know, five people on the court at the same time. I was a shooter, so my job was to always kind of, I needed like a great player on the court with me to really be my best. So, and I was lucky to have like really great teammates.
Mm.
I just loved like finding the gaps and finding the place to get the open shot. And I just love the competition of it. I love the performance of it. I loved the adrenaline of playing in front of a crowd. But I also love just going to 24-hour fitness with nine other strangers, and we just pick teams and play all day. And so what I love most is those times growing up of just like showing up to a gym and just staying there all day. And we would play and we would talk and mess around and eat junk food. And you just make these friendships that are all like rooted in this like common language and experience of basketball. So, you know, the game itself for sure, but I think like more so the culture and community of basketball is really what I love. And so many of my close friends and relationships over my life are like very much tied to people that I played with. And, you know, you ride in a 16 passenger van with 12 people all 6 feet and above to tournaments sweating, and it sounds terrible as I'm describing it, but I do like, I romanticize it looking back. And then I became a coach, and so like I loved that part of it too, because then you have a chance to kind of give back something that was so meaningful to you,
mm-hmm.
to
mm-hmm.
young people. And the opportunity to coach was like really amazing, and something that I'll always be looking to find a way in. And now that I have a daughter who's two, you know, we have a little hoop in our house, so I'm showing her some moves and stuff. But I just really love coaching because it does give you like a common language to teach like really important lessons about life. Like a lot of the things I learned about competition, or when you face difficulties, or teamwork and collaboration and leadership, pretty much, you know, I wasn't necessarily like reading books on these topics. I was learning it through playing basketball.
Yeah, it's about the people at the end of the day, right? And it's kind of got this like band of brothers type of experience. Like sometimes when guys enter the military, I've heard similar descriptions. It's like you don't really have that bond quite like it anywhere else. And I definitely have heard it in like teams, basically like teams where you just spend so much time having to connect, bond, figure things out. And yeah, at the end of the day, it's about the people, right?
Definitely.
So do you remember some of like the earliest storytelling ideas or themes that you wanted to explore? Did you start, I think you said you eventually started writing about experiences based on basketball, but what were some of the things you wanted to explore as a writer?
I mean, when I first started writing, I like literally just only was writing like what was accessible to me. And I wasn't thinking about it. I wasn't thinking about it much deeper than that, actually, which was probably a good thing initially to start, because I wasn't like,
yeah,
I didn't feel handicapped in any way by, I didn't feel like I had some big thing to say when I first started. And so I was just writing. So like my first play was like about college roommates. And then I wrote like a play that was about a couple,
mm-hmm.
you know, never saw the light of day, but was kind of inspired probably more by movies and plays than it was by real life. Just like trying to do this medium was where it started. I just wanted to do the stuff I liked watching. And
yeah.
And I really was always interested in characters and dialogue. I've always really gravitated towards like language driven stuff where you know, the way the characters talk is almost as entertaining as the story. And so I always like really liked that. And
yeah.
And then it just became from there, it kind of grew, I guess. And then I started learning more about the craft. And then honestly, like as I got older, I started to figure out like, okay, instead of just sitting down and just writing whatever comes to me, like really being more intentional about what I'm saying in my work.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I definitely didn't necessarily start from that place. I was just so pleased with myself that I wrote anything on the page at all at the beginning. I couldn't believe that I would print it out and look at it and be like, I can't believe that I did this. And so that was enough motivation initially. And then with theater, what's so cool is like, I started writing and then it was like, then you get actors to come in and do it. And so then like back to like with the basketball side of things, theater was very much a similar revelation for me. And it was a time in my life where theater came in when I was like sort of on my way out with basketball. And it was like a community I needed, and you know, individualism was really celebrated in the theater. And so I think like, honestly, that was where it started, was just getting it down and then like having so much fun being free to be weird and like make stories happen. And that process became what was driving me at first.
It's so nostalgic. You're making me think back, but even like the scripts that I wrote that got me into DDW, it was like, I wrote them early on basically to kind of emulate the things that I enjoyed and the voices that I enjoyed. And so early on, I was very much like, I would just love to be able to write a story that was as entertaining or whatever that I liked as much as whatever television show I was watching. So I think early on, it was almost like a little bit of like trying to mimic the things that I enjoyed. But then, yeah, as you say, you kind of like slowly, hopefully create more depth and understanding of like where your ideas or your craft comes from, which was like definitely a journey for me later on. But speaking of NYU,
yeah,
dude, I read the old transcript of our conversation. I forgot your whole story of like at the last minute you joined the program and you had to make what I assume was a pretty rapid decision on that. And like you committed and you, I believe, packed your bags and came to New York and crashed on somebody's friend's place until you could find your own place. And I was like, that is someone like making an effort to commit to something that they want to do. So I just want to like say that to you. Maybe 10 years later, it might be interesting to look back, but like, what was your overall DDW or MFA experience? And would you do anything differently?
Yeah, that was a crazy time. I was living in California and I just only applied to NYU and I just really wanted to move to New York was a big part of it. But I was also very driven. I was writing a lot.
Yeah.
I would have done anything to be a PA on a TV show and just like be somebody's assistant and get coffee. And it felt impossible to break in at all. But I was working odd jobs and I was writing a lot. And so, yeah, I got in during orientation as the last person off the wait list and just was like, I gotta do it. And so went to New York and as you said, crashed on couches and did all of that. And I look back fondly on my time at NYU. I got a lot better as a writer, made connections with a lot of other writers like yourself that were really important, you know, just for the relationships, but also just to grow as an artist. I do miss being around so many people in the same room that are writers, like writing their own original stories and talking about it. You know, I love, especially with playwriting, being in a room with other playwrights and just kind of like really focusing on helping the writer to tell the story that they want to tell. I feel like that's something that I didn't know how special it was until now, like looking back, to be in those spaces. So yeah, overall, I mean, like just, I was there recently and in New York and I went around the old neighborhood where Tish is and I was having all these nostalgic memories. I mean, so much of it was school, but like the thing I really honestly to really remember is just, I live in New York City. Like I was like this, that was the thing that was so amazing to me. And just like really enjoying like living in New York City and living the life of a writer and being in school. And it was like so singularly focused on art. You know, it was something I really cherish. I really look back at it, and sometimes I'm jealous of myself when I was at NYU. It's like, man, that was great. Like, you could just really focus in, write, be living in New York. I was eating dollar pizza and just writing till 2 o'clock in the morning and not worried about how much sleep I was getting. And I was just doing it. And so all of those pieces of it, yeah, I really love. I don't know if I would do anything differently. I don't tend to look at life that way. I guess if I was advising somebody else, I'd say it's a lot of money to go to grad school for the arts. And I wish that that was something that would change in the system of it all. But I don't think I would take back my experience over that. But it is daunting to go into an MFA program that costs so much, I would say.
I miss the good old days when education was seen as a public good, but maybe that's a different discussion. But for sure, it's like I miss the experience, and especially with the financial commitment that was involved. Also, just like moving to the city in itself is a financial commitment.
Yeah.
I think looking back, I wish I had cherished that time a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, it's not something that's automatically just going to be, you're just going to be surrounded by. And in fact, you know, I found it took a lot more effort later on to recreate that same motivation and that you could sort of like inspire each other. It was a very special moment for me as well, but mostly I don't have any regrets, but mostly it was just like, I wish I'd really taken it in that it was only 2 years and like,
mm-hmm.
you know, and we were going to move on with the rest of our lives and all of that. It's funny looking back, right? So
yeah,
in a previous life and now as well, yeah. I was a musician. And I remember having that experience that I wanted to ask you about, whereas like I, you know, have the experience of playing music or being a pianist, but then I also wrote a play that I actually quite enjoy that was about music and also other like topical themes. And so I'm curious what that experience is like for you. You have the experience of both like playing basketball, but then now kind of being able to show it or being able to kind of look at it from a storytelling dramatic perspective. Like, how would you describe what that's even like? That's a very like writerly thing.
I remember that play that you're talking about. I like that play.
Thank you. Thank you. And I,
your play. Yeah.
I wasn't playing the piano at the time though, but I'm glad to have it back. And I definitely had that moment. I was like, I feel like I'm trying to work out some things about it through writing maybe a little bit, but what's it like for you now to kind of have both? You know what I mean? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like kind of the two passions kind of cross one another. Yeah. I mean, it all started when I was working in, I was in a theater company in New York, and we were going to put something up. And so I wrote this play with actors in mind called Exposure. It was about basketball. And so that was the beginning of it. And that took me to the O'Neill, which was, you know, like a really amazing experience to develop the play, and brought a lot of eyes to it. And that process was really great, because what it is, it feels like the voices of that culture, as I knew it, of basketball, are just so kind of like my first language, that it was like, it just comes supernaturally to write basketball and people within the basketball community. And I have always had really strong opinions about shows and movies that have showed basketball. I'm like a pretty harsh critic, sometimes too harsh probably, but I really knew the kind of stories I wanted to tell. And my play was really about kind of how young talented player is commodified and also sort of treated like an adult because they look like an adult, but they're not an adult, not yet a man at 17 years old. But when the eyes are on you and the spotlight is on you, similar to how we treat like our young 14-year-old phenom singers in our country, like we do with our athletes, where suddenly everybody kind of wants a piece of what their journey is going to be. And those people that want a piece of it are adults.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, in terms of just knowing I really wanted to say something about that was where I started from, and that was the first thing I wrote about basketball. And so that was really important to me. And then I've had a couple other things in the basketball realm, you know, on my own. And then I write for Swagger, which is about basketball. And that's been an amazing experience to work on Swagger, because in many ways it's like revisiting those years when, you know, being on set, and kind of, I was involved with the show from the beginning of season one, and got to know like all the young actors, the teenagers in the show. Some of them were actually not actors. They were basketball players that learned to act, that were like literally kind of doing the things that the characters in the show do at the time in their lives in real life. And so just a really cool experience to blend those two things. And then we did training and stuff on the show. So I was like on a court, like with the kids, and it was sort of meta because, you know, I'd come from coaching and writing plays to going to do the show. And now we're on a basketball court, practicing drills and learning plays and all of that kind of stuff. But again, like even off the court, really just like loving being back in as a part of basketball culture. And, you know, Isaiah, who is our lead, he was a basketball player, and like we would go find time to go play horse or something in during lunch. And so the love of the game is like shared through it, which is really, really, really cool. And yeah, it's like always a gift when you can take something that was like really personal and from your life that you really cared about and find a way back into it through art. And I know that you kind of stopped playing piano for a while, and I stopped playing basketball for a while. Like I left because of a lot of reasons. I was kind of burned out, and actually through writing is how I kind of refound it again. And that's really helped me to kind of just, I never stopped loving it, but I just like really fell back in love with it in a way where I was back coaching and writing about it and thinking about it again.
Has that kind of like coming full circle kind of vibe to it, what you're describing, right? And yeah, I guess in some ways with like my passion in for piano and all the hard work that I put into it, I've had some of that myself, but writing actually was helpful to help me bridge the gap, because you have to explore all the ups and downs of what it took to be that passionate about something too, you know what I mean? And there were lots of ups and downs.
Yeah.
So talking about your time and working experience in the entertainment industry, it's kind of a broad question, but what's the most surprising thing about the entertainment industry to you?
I don't know. There's been a lot of surprises, but it's really, really challenging. I mean, it's really challenging, I'd say. I mean, you know, with what's going on, obviously some of those things are being addressed, but just to make a life, how hard it is to really make a life out of it. I always kind of thought like once you're in, like then you have a career and then you can make a life for yourself and your family because you're in. But it's not really like that nowadays. And it's just surprising to see how, in some ways, like how undervalued the people that make the stories that we all consume actually are in terms of, you know, the gatekeepers of it all.
Yeah.
And then a lot of the issues that have come up with the strike have made me think about, oh, that happened to me, that happened to me. And in some ways, in other ways, like, oh, I was actually lucky with this or lucky with that. I still am surprised, generally speaking, like how everybody consumes art and entertainment, but not necessarily with the understanding of appreciation for the people making it. And people don't understand, you know, when I look at a painting, I don't necessarily understand everything that the painter did to put into it. And I wish I knew more about painting. So like, I get it as a consumer of that particular art form, but I wish that there was more of an understanding of like how much of our lives and ourselves we put into this stuff. So it's always surprising to me when it feels like that's just totally forgotten or not stated or not a part of the conversation.
Yeah. Thank you for saying that. Recently, I very quickly had a few exchanges with someone who works in, does CGI. And it was just like the difference, the disconnect between like what people tend to evaluate and talk about and look at, that's in front of the screen, and then like what the world of, for the people in that industry who have to do that work, what it's like, it's just like, it's so night and day that it is almost, you know, shocking in many ways. But you did bring up the writer strike. It doesn't have to be like a PSA moment necessarily, but is there anything more that you want to say about the writer strike that's ongoing?
I mean, really what I would say is that I feel like we are asking for something extremely reasonable. We're asking for fair wages and fair treatment. And I also feel that way about SAG and the actors. And I can't say it's surprising anymore, but it's difficult to understand why that's met with such profound resistance, because writers and actors and directors and crew and everybody that puts these shows and movies together that help these companies make so much money, everybody's putting so much into it, and they don't exist without us. And when it comes to writers, you know, it starts on the page. You know, if a writer didn't sit down to write a script, there would be nothing to direct, there would be nothing to act in. You know, I don't know how many times we'll have to repeat the message, but it seems like we've come to a point where we're not gonna kind of back down, and I'm fully on board with that, because it's a really crazy time for the industry with everything going on, from AI to, you know, the difference between like the old model of television and streaming. And, you know, we're seeing a labor movement more broadly in the world right now. And I think it's just a really interesting new gilded age sort of that, that we're going through, and that workers should be fighting for what they're rightfully owed, and for their rightful compensation right now, because if we don't, it'll be years probably before we'll be able to try to fix that, if we ever will. So now is the time.
Yeah, especially over the past few years, you know, how many people relied on having something to keep them company and keep them distracted when they were socially isolating with nothing else to do. I had a moment, people thought I was exaggerating, but I was like, no, I think it's people underestimate the power or the value of storytelling until you realize you need that sometimes to feel human and to feel connected and to feel like you understand each other and what's going on with your life. So everything you said is seconded. Maybe on to some more. So jumping on to some more fun topics. Okay, I have to ask you this because I don't think I ever did, but you were a Beyonce dancer. Is that a thing? Like what is that?
Oh yeah. What is that? Yes. Technically I was a Beyonce dancer for one night. I guess I should preface this by just saying I can't not dance, but I can't dance. You know, like if there's music playing at a party, I can dance a little bit. And you know, fine, I can hold a rhythm, but I'm not a dancer at all. Like I'm not. So I was an actor. When I got out in college, I acted in plays and I was in LA, and then I wanted to pursue that for a brief time. And so I had a agent for commercials that would send me out to, like, you know, the Crest commercial, and like, and I would go audition, and I was quickly like kind of learning, like, maybe this isn't the life for me. But I got a call one day from my commercial agent, basically being like, hey, we got you a job as a Beyonce dancer. And I was like, super confused. I was like, well, like, okay. But you know, like, I really don't think I can do that. I've seen what Beyonce dancers do. I definitely can't like do that. And he was like, no, it's fine. You know, they're hiring 60 people, and 10 of the people that they want to hire are actors and models. And so that's who we represent. And we'll put you up for one of the 10. And I was like, I mean, okay, like, how much does it pay? And they said like $2,000. And then I was like, all right, cool. I don't care how embarrassing this is. Like, I'll do it. I needed the money. And so, yeah. So then I was told to like show up to this dance studio in LA, and I showed up, and yep, there was like 60 male dancers there, 10 of which apparently were like me, who were just actors there for some reason. And like rehearsal just sort of started, and like we got lined up, And rehearsal started and the choreographer starts like doing all of the moves. And I'm my immediate, like my heart like sank in my chest, like immediately, like, what are we doing here? It was so hard. And so just trying to keep up, like so confused as to what I'm doing here. And then like eventually during that night, like Beyonce comes in to the rehearsal space to like watch what we've been working on, you know, after like an hour or so of working on it. And I swear, like, as she's watching it, her eyes, like, just find us. That she just, like, finds, like, the 10 of us. And I'm like, oh, no. Like, we're just disappointing Beyonce right now. And so after, like, another take or two of doing it, we had, like, a break. And I just remember we took our break and we came back in and the choreographer, like, looked sweatier than before, like kind of nervous, and kind of was like just getting us, whipping us into shape, like telling us how important the stakes were, because like the performance was for the Grammys, actually. So it was this big Grammy performance, a mashup of all of her songs.
Mm.
And so anyway, then the next, I think it was the next day, this was like a decade or more than a decade ago, we went to the Staples Center.
Mm-hmm.
And we started like rehearsing in the hallways during the day, and it was like dress rehearsal day, and we're working on our moves. And over the course of that day in the hallways of the Staples Center, the 10 of us, our dance roles got reduced smaller and smaller and smaller, to the point that it was like literally like we were just doing a kind of a two-step.
Mm-hmm.
And I was pretty happy about that. And so our roles got reduced down. And then we did a dress rehearsal, and that's when we learned that the 10 of us were actually put in the aisles, like facing the stage, doing our two-step while the 50 real dancers danced around Beyonce up on the stage and on the platform and doing all this stuff.
Uh-huh.
Then the day of the show, we got our costumes, and the costumes are fully covered. They're like superistic, like futuristic, like stormtrooper looking costumes that fully cover your face too. So I don't know why they needed any actors or models to do anything at all in this situation. But so we got the costume, and it's like this glass like helmet. And so then it's time for the show, and we're like backstage, and 60 dudes in these like uniforms march through like backstage. I passed J-Lo. She looked terrified of all of us, like not sure what was going on. And we go out there, and I'm actually like in the front of the 10 of us. I'm like in the front, like right next to the stage. To my left, when I get out there, is Lil Wayne, like sitting in a chair next to me.
Yeah.
And who I'm a huge fan of. So I was like, wow, that's really cool. And then Beyonce starts, and she does like a medley of several songs with all the dancers. And I'm doing a two-step, kind of just watching from the front row, a Beyonce mashup performance with strobe lights going. I'm sweating. So my like mask on my helmet, my glass is like fogging up. It was crazy, but it was really, really cool. I just like watched Beyonce from the front row do all this stuff. So, and then I got paid $2,000 for it. And on my elevator ride out of the Staples Center, I rode the elevator with Lionel Richie. And yeah, so it was like one of the crazier experiences I've had in this weird business. And I still have absolutely no idea what I was doing there, but I always put it on everything, because I shouldn't be as proud of it as I am, because I like literally disappointed her in rehearsal, I think. But I am proud of it. I can say forever that technically I was a Beyonce dancer.
There's this like, I think it's like a meme now, so you may have heard of it, but there's this line from someone from like RuPaul. It's like, I'm not a dancer, but I'm not a dancer. I'm just going to picture you from now on now, just like so very confidently can say, I'm not a dancer. But I'm not a dancer, because look at my resume.
That's right. That's right. It's on the resume. Nobody can take it off.
No. Keep it up forever. No, absolutely. If I were in your shoes, that would be me always for the rest of time. Oh my gosh.
I should just lead conversations with that.
Absolutely.
Hi, I'm Steve. I was a Beyonce dancer. Yeah.
Well, it's always that like everyone's least favorite questions. Like, tell me something interesting about yourself. You have one that will probably not be able to be topped. There's that.
I told this story to my friend who's an actress, and she was like, man, I need to live more life. And I was like, wow, I can't. That is That's crazy that happened, you know? There was just no business for me to be there, but it happened.
No, you really planted the seed of, like, if he can be Beyonce's dancer, anyone can be Beyonce's dancer. Like, just believe in yourself.
Literally.
Just.
Like, literally anyone. I can do it. Literally anyone can do it.
Oh, man, I'm so glad I asked you about this. This is so funny. Well, so yeah, a lot has happened since then, I'm sure. One of which is that you're a dad now, which you mentioned.
Yes.
And you're beautiful. You have a daughter, Nina.
Yes.
I know a theme that you've explored in your writing is sort of about, like, belonging. I think we also kind of share something in common about how often we had to move and just, like, moved places and moved homes when we were growing up.
Yeah.
So becoming a parent now and being a dad, has that, like, influenced your, what you think about home and belonging and all of that?
Influenced a lot of stuff. Yeah. It's made me think back to my own childhood quite a bit. I really love being a dad, and it's just, like, the best thing ever. I love Nina so much. She's, like, hilarious and, like, a free spirit and innocent. And I like want it to last as long as humanly possible, but I know the world's complicated. So there's that part of it, but I definitely look back at my childhood and I do feel like I have a greater appreciation for my parents, just that they were just people. Like, you just sort of become a parent and then you're a parent. And I just remember as a kid thinking my parents were just parents. And so it's kind of like a little trippy to just be like, wow, I'm just like a person that is figuring out having a kid and being a dad as we go, which is kind of what all parents do. There's no way to explain that to a child at all. And so you know, like, looking back, yeah, I think I have more appreciation for my parents. And we moved a lot, and it was in an effort to kind of, they wanted to provide a better life for us. And, you know, the moves were tied to promotions and things like that. And so I really have a lot of respect for that. And it did have its challenges. You know, I definitely could see if somebody moved around a lot, feeling like they would never want to do that to their own kid, or that they would have some sort of resentment about that fact. But in my experience, and maybe it's partially because I became a writer, I find it to be, like, actually really helpful in a lot of ways, where I don't have, like, a base to go back to necessarily, like a community where I grew up. I do have an understanding of, like, lots of different people and places across the country because of living there for a short amount of time and, like, trying to fit in. And so as an adult, you know, as a writer, that's extremely helpful. And then as an adult, just, like, the ability to adapt is super important. And so that's something that now comes naturally just because of how I grew up. And so, you know, as a dad, like, I would want Nina to be, you know, well-adjusted and confident wherever she is. But I also think, like, really placing a value on adaptability and kind of, you know, I think a lot of life is, like, putting yourself in uncomfortable, sort of challenging situations and trying the thing you're afraid of and stretching your comfort zone. You know, I was just kind of naturally forced to do moving, but I think is really valuable lesson for kids, because that's just, like, the rest of our lives is going to be that. And I think a lot of people do end up settling into a place where, like, they avoid going outside of their comfort zone and they avoid what they're afraid of and they avoid making those types of choices. And so I would hope that she feels a sense of belonging, community, but also would never be scared to be bold and, like, go face those things. And so that's kind of where my mind's at with it now. And she's only two, so we have some time, but it definitely makes you think, you know, you kind of, yeah. You know, she's talking and asking questions and so definitely makes you think, like, you know, what do I want to pass down?
Wow. That was really profound. Thank you for sharing that. I think another question I wanted to ask you right now, just because we're both, like, writers and we both will always enjoy storytelling and everything. What are some things that have really, like, inspired you lately? Have you seen anything that has really, there are moments, every once in a while you see something where you're like, oh, I wish I had written that. That was so good.
Yeah, and this is such a like a moving target question, but because it's like when it's being asked, but like I as of right now, today, whatever today's date is, stuff I've seen recently that inspired me. I love this movie by Charlotte Wells, first time director, called After Sun. It's just this amazing movie. And Paul, I think you say his last name, Mescal.
Oh,
he was in Normal People.
Yeah.
He plays a dad in the movie, and the movie's through his daughter's perspective as they're on this like vacation. And it's just like really a beautiful, like indie movie that's told from the child's perspective. And I just thought the filmmaking was amazing and the performances were amazing. And it's not the kind of movie that like necessarily gets like a lot of broad acclaim, but it really had a big impact on me. Like I watched it and was like, man, I would love to be able to do something like that. Cause I just thought it was like so powerful and specific and made choices that were not always something I felt like I had seen before. I loved Succession from the beginning to the end. So,
yeah,
you know, going back to stuff that the language is almost as entertaining as the story is like Succession obviously fits that box.
And super theater like to me, you know.
Yeah, like Shakespearean sort of. I mean, like it is. I think he specifically wanted it to be King Lear, right? So so that was one. And I'm trying to think of other stuff recently. I watched Shiva Baby the other night. That was really good.
I've been meaning to check that out. I really liked the cast, like the two actresses in particular. I think one of them I saw in like The Bear. I like both of them a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Molly Gordon. Yeah. She was in The Bear. The Bear is another one for sure. I love that show. And being in Chicago and being, I mean, we are big time eaters. So like we've been to a lot of those restaurants that they showed in season two. And we live in like an area of the city that's kind of like one of the restaurant hubs. And so a lot of that type of stuff was like near our house. And so like, I loved it. And I also just, I mean, the episode that they did, the flashback, you know, with the family being Italian, I don't have family members necessarily that fit those exact character makeups because that was pretty intense, but it was really cool. They did like the Feast of the Seven Fishes and it was like shot really claustrophobic and and they have like A-list actors across the board and I thought that was amazing. And I also loved the one when cousin, I forget the character's name, when he has to go work in the you know, which is a real restaurant in Chicago, but was kind of it was called Ever, but it was like also fictionalized some, but the way he has to navigate that. And I thought it was really moving how he felt like such a closed off character. And then it's like super moving when he actually opens himself up a little bit and something new.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I probably could go on and on if I really keep thinking about it, but those are the first things that really popped into my mind.
Yeah. You're reminding me to check out Shiva Baby because I wanted to do that. But The Bear was something I also saw. And yeah, it made me think about like Chicago and what an impact it can have. I think I just saw something on TikTok recently that was like the way out the door for Kasama, which I think was like pretty heavily featured in an episode. It's like out the door, 90-minute wait,
yeah,
which is just like what you want to hear about, again, like being able to have an impact when you can develop these stories. So yeah.
Yeah. What about you?
Yeah. I was going to say The Bear is some of my favorites right now. And, those two episodes in particular, I think the Richie episode actually made me tear up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And it probably happened because I really didn't really connect with that character. I kind of understood like why he's there, but I was like, he's such a dickhead. But then that episode kind of like turned it all around in a single episode. I was like, damn, like I resonate with that. And I think a lot of men resonate with Richie, like just the underpinning frustration. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Yeah, I do. It just made me think of another thing though. It made me think of, another show recently, Beef. That show is like one of the weirdest, coolest, craziest things I've ever seen. Like I thought it was super unique. And I also really liked the Barbie movie. I thought it was kind of inspiring in its own way. Like just to see a writer director take something that everybody, not everybody, I shouldn't say everybody, take something that from my perspective, I was like, I would never be interested in seeing a mass appeal, broad movie about Barbie. But she took this idea, it kind of shows you there's no bad ideas, it's about execution. She takes this idea and makes it something like really like culturally interesting and like smart and kind of pushes an envelope, which is really, really exciting and cool, I thought.
Yeah, that one I saw in theaters and that was such a fun experience, and it had been a while since I've been in the theaters where everyone was kind of relaxed and like enjoying themselves, truthfully. So that was actually really special for me. And last thing I guess for me I'll say is like there had been kind of like a gap since like Crazy Rich Asians. Like everyone was like, oh, this could be the beginning of like a floodgate where more representation. But it wasn't until like Everything Everywhere where like there was suddenly kind of this surge of like, I guess, pride, you could say. But recently I've like saw a bunch of movies that were like Asian cast, specifically East Asian mostly, but like Past Lives, I love that. Very
I wanna see that.
Playwriting. Yeah, very playwriting type of story. It may not be for everyone, but I love that kind of stuff. And yeah, so it's like fun to, hopefully we can have in the industries where it can, we can keep making this stuff and not have to step on other people's necks all the time. Thanks for connecting with me. This is really fun. And just the way you think about...
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, just the way you think about the craft and everything. And yeah, I feel like I could use some of that motivation myself to like put pen to paper these days. So yeah, it's a good reminder, Steve.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Really good to see you as always.
Thank you for tuning in. Listeners are welcome to connect with me over Instagram and LinkedIn. You just have to search my name. And I love to hear from you. If you'd like to learn more about my work as a coach and artist, please visit www.robertkwanghome.com.